So just a little bit background about who I am. I work for the council, and at the moment under Edwina's championship, really, I'm tasked with writing the environment strategy for Cornwall, which we are endeavouring to go to as wide a community as possible to get input on that. At the moment, it's relatively restricted to environmental stakeholders. After Christmas, it will be a more full and public consultation. So an invitation, really, to talk to me about that if you want to. And it probably says a little bit about the mindset that I've taken towards what I'm going to say now and why I'm going to fling the floor back over to open and over to you. So this is a really interesting question for me. I have recently taken on management of both the Natural Environment Strategic Team and the Historic Environment Strategic Team in the council. I don't have a technical background in the historic environment, so this question was really interesting. Gosh, and it's really made me think. However, I think hopefully I've helped. And some of my team helped me put a few introductory slides together. So it is an unequalled historic environment in Cornwall. We're blessed with some regionally significant landscapes and features, I suppose, cultural features. And I suppose the point about it, what is so lucky about it, is that the stretch of time that we can see here, which actually in many other places that you can't. It's also diverse. So not only do we see a huge stretch of time, we see a great big mix of land uses and these, some, I suppose, distinctively Cornish features like the hedges and the dispersed settlements that have been talked about today. And it's also been made. I think that's the other thing that's really struck me and talking to colleagues as I've come into this bit of environment management about actually how much impact humans have had on the Cornwall that we now live in. So I had a bit of a think about the question about actually why is cultural history critical to sustainable policy making? So while I'm not a cultural historian and not an expert on cultural heritage, what I am being tasked to do is become an expert on policy making on sustainability, and boy is that a big challenge. But what this made me really think about was what the existence of cultural heritage does for us, and while I'm primarily talking about environmental cultural heritage, I recognise that there is artistic, less tangible assets in terms of dance and art and literature that also contribute to this, is it gives us an opportunity to evaluate the decisions and actions that people plus the environment made once upon a time, however long ago that was. And the existence of that, actually, if we choose to take it, can really be a point of thought. And what I started getting interested in is how do we do that evaluation? How do we make that meaningful enough that it genuinely informs us for the future? So it's not that just we go, oh, it was good, it was bad, it was significant. Why? And perhaps at the time it was. And I think the point was made earlier about the tin mining waste and now the land that actually has recovered and has got different ecological value on it now. No, we may not have permitted it. There has been something positive out of it. But if we could have known that that was going to happen, would we have chose to do that with it? Nonetheless, there is positive out of it, there is something, but we are fortunate now to be in a more knowledgeable position. We have a longer lens backwards in time about the consequences of our decisions. So it wouldn't be appropriate, really, for us to say, oh, well, we're just the same as those people in the 17th century making those decisions about tin mining. We're different. We have the benefit of a huge amount of insight and learning that's come through communication, technology, etc., that can be then input into people now and going into the future, plus the environment that we have inherited. So that is about then what decisions and actions do we take for a sustainable future. So for me, being asked this question actually really brought home to me how critical cultural heritage is for sustainable policy making. And I've just got a few couple of examples about why it would be, and this idea about irreplaceable resource, and I've had a few debates about my team about what terminology you might use for non-renewable, irreplaceable cultural heritage, whereas actually it's one of the most renewable things in some senses, because cultural heritage is being constantly renewed. The actual artifacts of it are, of course, the things that it irreplaceable at some level because it was of a specific time and context. So how do we handle that when there is so much pressure for change? And one of the things that is interesting about, and by studying our cultural heritage, is the things that we learn, things that we didn't know that we didn't know, which now is of huge benefit to us. So for example, by studying the peat samples in some areas, we found that actually they weren't uplands, clear uplands, barren as we see them now, which we think should be there and should be preserved as they are. Actually, once upon a time, they were forested and densely ecologically more valuable and providing more functions than they do. But we wouldn't have known that unless we looked at these sorts of things. And I think, again, the point was made earlier today, what is it that we are trying to sustain? And I think this particularly makes a good point. And in terms of thinking about the environment strategy, we're thinking a lot about the diminishing baselines. So actually now, our perspective on now, the window of the world that we have, actually is not reflective necessarily from where we came from. And we can use technology and cultural history to reveal that actually we're dealing with something that actually is more depleted than we possibly can imagine. So there's also the sense that actually the heritage assets show us how historically we have thought about the past and the future, the seasons, our interlinkages with the environment are absolutely woven into some of the artefacts and the settings that we now see. So we're not unique in trying to think about the future. Many, many people have done it before. It's how we do it, really, and what we learn from. And again, I thought this was a really interesting example, that in terms of ancient woodlands, actually possibly they are the best example of sustainable decision making. There aren't many of them left, mind you, which maybe says something about the direction of travel that our decision making is taken. But actually, ancient woodlands have been managed to some degree throughout their history, yet they sustain, and they have, you know, the beautiful old trees of many hundreds of years that have survived. So are we presiding over environments now and places and communities now where we could say this is similar? Are we making things with the longevity, and are we stewarding things in the same way? And I think that, again, that's a good thing, that these examples of what has gone before help us think about the decisions that we're taking now. And it's a bit of a shameless plug for some members of our department, actually. But this is a good example, I think, of how we can interact going forward with what has been before. And that our Town Heritage Initiative team have developed a guide for how you retrofit renewable energy technologies into historic assets and historic buildings. And it's been very, very popular, and has made real differences, and meant that in many cases buildings that would otherwise potentially have been demolished, particularly I've seen some examples in Camborne recently, they would have been gone, but actually they're preserved, being used, regenerating areas. And one of the things that we're talking about in the strategy is this concept of environmental growth, about how we actually turn from just preserving something, going back to the diminishing baseline point, which actually is really quite depleted, turning it round and enabling both nature and culture to flourish together. And I think this is a good example in an urban context about what we might mean by that. So it's not just about the natural environment and recovering ecosystems, it's also about making the most of our heritage, our cultural heritage, and taking us forward positively. So I didn't want to talk too long because I realised there are many learned people in the audience. So I thought it would be quite nice, and takes us on to some of the questions after the break as well, if maybe we could have a chat between ourselves and actually you guys think about what do you think is critical about cultural heritage, and what should people like me, who are endeavouring to try to write sustainable policy on your behalf, know? So then how long might we have, Colette? What time would you like to break? Mindful of time, everyone, we'll make it quite rapid. So if we can do about, you know, a minute, not even a minute, you know, a sort of a one sentence thing for group, I'll endeavour to capture it, and we'll try and get some output. So we've got first volunteers over here.
Okay, so we're thinking about, why is it just about buildings, ancient monuments? We should be thinking about the sporting culture. Are we still answerable to the Department of Culture, Media and Sport? But the key question is, what was it that caused children to describe themselves as Cornish? Were they thinking about ancient monuments, many of which actually are not even presented as Cornish? Were they thinking about folklore? What was it that has caused children to describe themselves as Cornish? And also the assertion now that the minority status is making people walk tall. They feel they can now have the courage to speak out.
Okay. Superb. Thank you. Group behind you, should we go round systematically?
One of the issues, I think, is the looking at the whole sweep of various cultural heritage elements and the sustainability or unsustainability of the various activities that went with some of those. You know, the wholesale clearance of forests, which is not sustainable, and affects the Mesolithic, Neolithic. Yeah. And then there's also the industrial heritage, the boom-bust economy that marked out mining, and what we can learn from that, and how we don't want to repeat that model.
Yeah.
It's unsustainable, essentially.
Okay.
But now we love the landscape. To keep it as it is.
And some of the brownfield sites are some of the most ecologically important.
It's interesting that, isn't it? And it's funny how maybe that goes back to the point earlier about resilience and how we do adapt. We are the most adaptable of species, so we will love what is in front of us. But whether it's the best, I think Tom's question earlier about is it the actually best that we can imagine? Is it the best that we can do? That's an interesting question. Next.
Okay. When we talk about best, maybe we could also think about being grateful for what we've got.
Indeed, I've often talked about that.
Because there is an ideological aspect, isn't there, to...
Yeah.
Is it the best that we can get? I think that what we've got is fairly beautiful and amazing and rich and wonderful.
Still,
which we have been given.
Considering where it came from. Yeah, okay.
Understanding the best of the past technology and applying it to the future. You know, there's all these subtleties of how things were made and then using some of those for sustainability for the future.
So sort of technology and skills.
Yeah. One other thing is I'm just concerned with all the internet and everything, that these sort of dialogues in the next generation, because it was doing a little bit, can break down, so there's a need to keep that as an oral.
Opportunity. Great.
The only other thing we did talk about was how they had the stannery laws here, and that's part of the cultural heritage and how that can then be used in the future, so you can keep the policy making perhaps and some decisions down here. And keep it local, keep it oral.
Okay, interestingly, I don't know what stannery law is, but I will go and look it up afterwards, so I'm sure they'll be really well. But we won't open that debate now. So if we keep going, can I keep going and logically round the room and then we'll go to the next group behind those guys, please? Anything to offer?
People are looking at me, so I suppose I better say something. I think what we came up with is that cultural heritage means different things to different people.
Yeah.
So some of us would see it in terms of, I think it's points already been made really, industrial heritage. Others would see it as you appear to do with your pictures, stone circles and Neolithic monuments, which don't mean a thing to me. And others would see it in terms of ecology and the environment and, you know, a lot of things that we've heard about earlier on today. So the different people take different bits of cultural heritage. Although heritage, I think I have a bit of a problem with, because it talks about the past, whereas I think there's still a lot to say about present Cornwall and future Cornwall.
Yeah, I think that's okay. That's
actually a big challenge of our sector, and there's something that I'm trying to work up in terms of the way the strategy is going, in terms of saying the disparate viewpoints we have within, if you like, the environmental and social sectors, that actually means that collectively, as a power, we weaken our strengths against what is seen as a singular economic viewpoint. Now, that may not be true about the economic side, and it may not be fully true about ours, but I think actually there is something about the slightly smaller group of people who are driving economic decisions that some are very good, again, I don't want to polarise us completely, but some of which we're saying actually are damaging to the things that we want to sustain or want to get better. actually, if we had a more collective view that as long as someone in our community who are valuing the environment and society gets their outcome against something that might be diminishing it, then actually we should all consider that as a good thing, good step forward. And I think that it's a bit of a call, really, to try and tighten up our common ground rather than always looking at the differences between us. And I think that there would be strength in that. But it's a really good point to say at the moment, actually, there's lots of different views. So, can I take one for a minute? Mm. Going back behind these guys, any...
They weren't very well behaved, thank you.
Okay. We've got one. We had just two comments with a nice little soundbite, feedback from the past.
Feedback?
Yeah. And the other one was pride in place.
Pride in place, yeah. Very strong theme in Cornwall about how much people show their face. Yeah.
We spoke about the help that the language can give us in understanding the place that is our home,
yeah.
And how once we realise that we have words in the Cornish language, for example, never to depict a sacred grove, and for example, I think that Nantivit is now one of the four places in Cornwall that still exists with this name.
Okay.
We had this recently, didn't we, Gary, from Professor McKinnon's talk that he gave us in Scotland, which was very valuable, I think, in helping us to really consider how we read our landscape and being in touch with the meanings of the place names. And this, of course, links us to the Celtic world and may ultimately or quite quickly lead us into Celtic spirituality and sense of reverence for the natural world.
Yeah.
And how helpful could that be for all of us, for our future? Thank you.
Yeah, great, thanks.
We pick it up on point five about cultural heritage, history and present. We discussed that that's a really flexible thing, so which bit of the heritage or which timeline do you want to pick up on?
That it
is so flexible in, and is an example, this college is the new cultural heritage. I'm a Penryn resident, so it's changed Penryn and the locality totally since I've been here. So in interesting ways, lots of positive ways.
On the ancient, medieval,
so it's,
yeah.
So which bit do you preserve, if you attempt to preserve any?
And I think that's a really interesting point, that when the diagram I put up earlier about, you know, actually looking at the cultural thing now, we can look from our perspective, and how far back do we choose to look then? As the heritage we look at opens our view backwards, which point do we pick to be the point that we then start to try and axes off? And how far in the future do we also try to project to? Because decisions for a certain future may mean that we do something now or we leave it a little bit more flexible. And I think as the interesting points that were made earlier about, you know, resilience and which scenarios are we working towards? Okay. A few other comments, I think. Can we start with...
We going back to your first point, actually, is this just about buildings? We talked about the ways in which it was about intangible cultural heritage as well. So things like language, as you were saying, but also literature and stories and the way that we talk about things, which isn't necessarily preserved in any way, but ought to be thought about in terms of what's sites and artifacts actually mean to people. So people may have different meanings for the same landscape or object or whatever. And the other thing we thought about was, are there examples around the world where we think they do this really well? And we decided we didn't know, but that it would be good to know.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. Excuse my dreadful handwriting, but we can type it up afterwards so everyone can share it.
I think in our little group, three things really. One is around the Cornish vernacular and the link to the point about buildings and, Yeah, don't ask me to repeat it because I don't think I can say it again. And actually, probably that's been especially over the last sort of 200 years, you know, some of the miners' cottages in Camborne, some of the civic buildings we've got as well, and how that's taken as inspiration for modern construction. Mm. And I think there's a whole issue there around construction viability, the development industry and that kind of thing, which I think the environment strategy has got to think about and link to. Second thing, Malcolm made a really good point about, we were talking about the National Minorities Report and the implications of it. And both Malcolm and I have got a very long association with Cornwall Council / County Council. Malcolm's longer than mine, I should hasten to add.
Thank you.
But, you know, he was saying quite rightly that sort of 20 years ago, you wouldn't have had council officers, members talking to somebody like Kerno King about how you actually develop that. You know, it would have been outside of the remit of discourse. So, you know, the council is, for Cornwall, is a different body in that sense, intellectually, I think, than it used to be. The third thing I just thought about as well, in terms of culture, is popular culture. And, you know, I mean, we've got a culture team within economic development, and we've got great examples, King Edward Mine, Crescent Kerno, etc., coming along. But also, there's loads of bands out there in Cornwall. You know, Kerno King is an example of it. And my own personal view is that a place starts to get together its cultural identity more strongly. If you look at Scotland and look at what you can think of famous people from those places, and it's that cultural popular identity that puts somewhere on a map.
Yeah.
So, in terms of people, you mentioned people, didn't you? People in Scotland and that. We've started a project between Cornwall and Brittany, and one of the questions we ask is, what are the three characters that come to mind when you talk about Brittany? And we're going to ask the same for Cornwall as well. So.
Okay.
I promised Tim, first of all, at the back there.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Okay.
Just a quick one, Tim.
yeah, it is a quick question, actually. The one thing I think is missing here is the voice or the meaning of Cornwall's cultural heritage to, as Richard was pointing out, the vast majority of us who do not identify as being Cornish.
Something that strikes me as being quite useful as a way of approaching the problem is to pick actually out projects. And something I'm associated with in Hale is the Passmore Edwards Institute, which is probably the best restored Passmore Edwards building in the county. Our problem at the moment, to put it in perspective, is finding out what design the front railings are, because we want to replace them. Now, it strikes me that with all the Passmore Edwards buildings around, the social, cultural and other tangible aspects would be a very good project to actually build on. I know that's not quite what you're asking, but...
Can I just ask a question about the policy, this process? Are you engaging perhaps with town and parish councils in this policy-making process? Because it seems to me they would value that on one hand. On the other hand, is they are sitting on quite a mine of information relating to their historical and cultural assets in their own communities. Yeah. So engaging with them and involving them in this process, I think, is crucial.
Yeah, and I think the managing the volume of that is one of the challenges about the process. So we're doing at the moment we're doing stakeholder. We do. No, I'm not saying we're not. We are absolutely mindful and committed to, and it's just how we do it appropriately is what we're doing. But there's plenty of time after Christmas for that input, and it would be very much welcomed.
Dee, and then Edwina, and then we go for T&K.
Thank you. I think also your deliberations need to take account of the Duchy of Cornwall, who seem content to build on greenfield sites, although they love to talk about how important farming and the countryside is.
I understand what you're talking about.
I went to a Kerno King concert, a set thing in the Loo Music Festival. He was absolutely brilliant. And one of his opening gambits is, what do you... He asked the same question, what do you think epitomised Cornwall? And the first person that said was Tregal Mills.
And on that popular culture. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you so much for participating. Thank you.